Now we go back to the study session. Review the items for next Monday's regular city council meeting. We're on page 2, items 3A through 3C, 3D through 4D, 4E through 4H. Councilmember Higgins.
Mayor, item 4F, the term contract for system furniture. I just wondered at this time, when we still have lots of empty cubicles in many buildings across the city, if we can't just use other furniture and move them around. It doesn't seem like, it's just another huge expense on walls. I didn't ever see anything that looks so poorly that it's dangerous to employees or something.
What's Mr. Mayor, on? Councilmember Higgins, these are for parts that we don't have in the system. We have, we do store a lot of parts that have come down from buildings throughout the city, and we do have certain facilities that we are able to still take some parts from, but there are the parts. When you design a space, you have to have the right size, the right configuration, and this is an as-needed contract, so we may not spend this amount, but it gives us a source when we don't have a part that we actually need to configure something the way it's needed by the department.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Okay, items 4I through 5E, 5F through 6A.
Mayor, item 5I.
5I.
The gas supply contract. I just wondered if there's a report that actually breaks that down into more specifics. The council report was like a page, and it just gave one number. Like, do we have a number for the gas and then the transportation and the actual part of the contract that would be the managerial side that you mentioned? It's sure. All balled into one big, huge sum of money, so it's kind of,
sure.
You know, because you look at gas futures, Mayor, it's very interesting. You can go to the hub something report and see what the economists are thinking about gas futures. It's very interesting.
I will make note of that.
Mayor, Councilwoman Higgins, let me try to break it down in a little more detail. The current gas supply contracts have several components to them. The main component is what we call our base daily quantities, and that is priced at a discount off of the index. That discount is 15 cents off the index. That takes care of about 80% of our gas supply requirements. That component, though, to get that discount, we also had to agree to a floor price. So even if the index goes below that floor, we pay the floor. That floor is $4.95. In the new contract, we've seen the market change, and that floor has been reduced to $3.50. So that has the potential of lowering our gas supply costs by a little over $1 million a year. Our total natural gas supply budget is a little over almost $17 million a year. So we have about $15 million of gas supply costs and almost $2 million of gas transportation costs on the El Paso natural gas pipeline. The amount that we pay Shell to manage and schedule and dispatch our gas supplies over El Paso is $1,000 a month. So that piece of the supply arrangements is very small compared to the total.
And do we ever do, like, part of our portfolio and like, play the market with it with gas futures and different kinds of things? Or are we just always doing, like, long-term, out-in-the-future contracts?
Yeah, and long-term is a relative term. For natural gas, we're entering into these three-year agreements with 2 1-year extensions. So 3 years in the gas industry is relatively long-term, whereas in the power industry it's short-term. We have not done hedging in terms of fixing a price in for an extended period of time for part of our gas supplies. One, that takes a lot of analysis that we don't have the staff to do. It puts some risks on us that we just don't have the capability to analyze. We compare our gas costs to the other utilities in the region, and we're confident that our gas costs are below the other entities in the region, and they do a lot of hedging of their gas costs. So the approach that we've taken, where we enter into these three-year agreements, we get discounts off of the index, so we are subject to the ups and downs of the market, but we've got a heavy enough discount, and now that we've reset the floor down to a much lower level, we'll be very much below the market costs.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay, Councilman Fender.
You know, one suggestion for the future is maybe we take this through the Enterprise Committee and Councilmember Higgins is part of it, and we kind of work through some of this and have that information so we can get the details at a committee level with the recommendation up. So maybe for all the utilities, because I'm always concerned about commodity costs and things that you're doing, so that might be an opportunity there. So,
Mayor and Councilmember Fender, we'd be more than pleased to kind of lay out and show you the planning process that we go through. That plans not only this part of our operations, but also building pipes and wires and poles.
Love to have it.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, it would be thrilling.
Any other items on that page? Mr. Wesley, could you explain just a little bit on 6A, what's involved there?
Yes, Mayor and Council, this is an amendment to the development at 915 North Val Vista Drive, that plat that's gone in. They've begun work on the western half of this development. The proposal before you is with the eastern half of the property. As they developed the first part, they had envisioned having no on-street parking in the development. They've recognized that that was maybe not a good choice, and so they wanted to include on-street parking in phase two. To do that, they needed to widen the streets. To widen the streets, they needed to adjust their lot sizes so that they could keep the minimums that they had established initially. So this PAD simply is adjusting some of the lot sizes to widen the streets to provide for on-street parking.
And you're basically widening the street by 4 feet, right?
Yes.
Okay. Councilman Higgins?
So so they're keeping the same amount of lots. They're making them smaller.
They're ending up being the same size, or a little wider and a little shallower in order to accommodate for that change in the street.
It doesn't change the nature of the project. It just changes the configuration.
Correct.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Any questions on that? Okay, items 7A and 8.
Go ahead.
Councilmember Fender.
I was hoping, I thought there was some positive news in the delinquent accounts collections, and I was hoping if it's okay, just take a moment with Ed. It seems like there might be a trend developing, or at least something better happening.
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Fenter, we're a little reluctant to call it a trend with just two quarters yet, but yes, we do see a good sign there. It is good news. The last two quarters have been down. This quarter was overall 0.19. So less than 0.2% as a write-off on these revenues. Generally look at the utility revenues because those billing and collection activities are consistent. You know, there's not really too many spikes. Tax, for instance, can have spikes depending on what we're writing off and when in the process. But utilities is also 0.19%. That is actually the lowest that I have seen in the charts that I go back to 2001. So this is good news. We have tightened credit policies. We have updated our deposits. We do very actively work commercial accounts where our risk is high. And what we try and do with those commercial accounts is build a relationship with those folks so that they understand that we need our payment, and we work with them on when we can get that. So it's a combination of those efforts, as well as I think it's a sign that things might be changing in the economy overall.
And I mentioned that, you know, the council gave you tools, and we, you know, at many levels we were saying, what can we do to do better? And hopefully we'll start to see a trend and others. I think there's some little tweaking we can do on deposits and things. I've seen some of the unintended consequences. And so I think when we next cycle, when it comes around, we take a look at that. But definitely some good news, and I appreciate the efforts going there. So
yes, we have started the fees and charges process now for the next budget year. So we'll be bringing that back in the spring.
And when you mentioned 0.19 or other, I mean, these are hundreds of thousands of dollars of increments that are.
And this is good news both for Mesa as we try to fund our operations, as well as the citizens and the other utility customers, because, you know, if I'm able to pay my bill, it's nice to know that other bills are getting paid as well. So it's a good thing overall.
Okay. Councilman Higgins? I'd like to say something about item 7A, which is the, and I know we talked about this a little bit before, which relates to Senate Bill 1525 and the impact fees. You know, there are a lot of people who have asked me, how could the city of Mesa give up something? And if you remember, that we had already won. Speaking of court cases, we had actually won an appeal related to the imposition of cultural impact fees. The city won that and then turned right around and literally a week later gave that up in negotiations related to 1525. This issue of impact fees has been one of the most contentious issues that the legislature and the business community has dealt with for many years. The home builders and developers have been pitted against the cities in literally a never-ending battle, a battle of very well-defined philosophies, passions that were very, very high, and it was really marked by an inability to come to common ground. This year, it really went to new heights. And yet the parties were able to sit down and talk through their differences, and both parties gave up some, both parties got some. I don't think either party really abandoned their basic principles. They just realized that in implementing these principles, there are a variety of ways to get to where you want to go. Cities can still charge impact fees, and I believe growth pay for itself, which is something that most people really would like to see happen. Home builders believe that we have a system that is now more predictable and more equitable to them. Part of what we gave up was the city of Mesa gave up its right to charge cultural impact fees, even though we had won that in court. We had that right. But it was something that we negotiated in order to reach a greater good. And the only reason I say that is that in this environment where it seems like our legislators and in Washington, they are completely incapable of arriving at a decision based on something like we're going to stand by our principles, I point this out as a great example that parties can get together, even when there is a great deal of animosity and a lot of passion. We can sit down and come to an agreement. And so even though it seems like we're giving up something here, and we are, I think that we won something that was much more beneficial and in the long run will benefit both us and the business community, and that we've come to a settlement, we've achieved stability, and we've put aside differences for at least a few years, and we're letting a system work. So this to me is not a defeat as much as it is a great example of what happens when people get together to solve problems, and they're committed to doing that. And that was not easy. I know I was smack dab in the middle of that, and they were tough meetings, but we got there. So I'm actually happy to see this come through because of what it represents. Anything else? We have one request to speak today from citizens present. Brian Jeffries, still here? Oh, Mr. Jeffries. You know the routine, Brian.
I do.
Let's go right ahead.
Thank you for having me. Happy holidays, Council.
No, we'll do this now, and then we'll...
This is the agenda for the Council.
I need to go after, don't I?
You can go right now.
You should have gone before.
No, go ahead right now.
Okay.
You're sitting there. It doesn't matter what order we go in.
Sounds good.
We're now at items, citizens present, skipping beyond the other stuff.
Here's
the deal. Okay, I got to explain what's happening. I'm going over the agenda, and we have items from citizens present on three agendas.
Yeah.
And so I saw that as the next thing, so that's why I invited him up.
I get to get my information in before, so that works well.
Thank you. Go right ahead.
Thank you. I'm here today because you guys are going to be speaking somewhat about considerations for returning pay back to city employees. And I spoke to you here in recent weeks about this, and I want to bring it up again for some very specific reasons. The two specific reasons are, one, to talk about the step pay program in the city of Mesa, and two, to talk about a tool that I think is important for you all, and that is specifically costing the MOUs for those of us that use the meet and confer process. I was thinking about this issue, and I think about it a lot, which will surprise the heck out of you, but about 30 years ago, a city manager for the city of Phoenix, John Wentz, said, "I can buy employees like I buy pencils." And the context of that statement was talking about equitable pay for city employees and step raises for city employees. 30 years later, as we were looking at this issue, and one of my former esteemed colleagues, Mr. DeCiccio, was asking a lot of questions about those, the city manager, David Cavasso, said, "This program is incredibly important for the young people and the future of our organization." He said, "For them to understand a clear path to reach pay ranges that we advertised." And he stood up to Mr. DeCiccio and defending that program. He was not the only one, because if you look around our valley, most of the valley cities that we compare with did not eliminate their step pay programs. The city of Phoenix, the city of Tempe, the city of Chandler, the city of Glendale, the Apache Junction Fire District, and the city of Peoria. You guys have a real challenge, and you probably didn't anticipate this, that bringing back money to city employees is a very positive thing, and it's getting a little bit complex. And the reason so is this is an interesting year. You guys have been very gracious through our process in allowing us, especially people like myself that are at the top of our pay ranges within the fire department, to allocate some monies away to help our younger employees continue through their steps. We really greatly appreciate that. But we're moving forward, and Mr. Brady and us are having a little battle of the calculators. And this battle is going to continue as the management makes the contentions that the way we program monies is something that we've traditionally done, where we're stating that there are monies there that are allocated that should be utilized for the employees. We have that constant arm wrestling match, and that's a product of how we do business, and that's fine. But this year, as you guys contemplate this, I'm deeply concerned, because City Edge is on its way. And this is going to be a great thing for the city, I believe. Probably not the second coming, some thought it would be, but we'll see. But there's a reason why that's so important, because we keep talking about the potential of a STEP program, but City Edge is going to provide some tools for management to do some different things with payroll around here. How we allocate FLSA overtime and have for many, many years is going to be contemplated, and already is, as a tool at the expense of city employees via City Edge. In addition, even if there is a STEP, quote unquote, program implemented in the city, it's going to allow manipulation of that program to go against the traditional way we've implemented that program. And why that is so important is because all the above mentioned cities that have not gotten rid of their programs are continuing through their programs. And what's happening, according to an HR study done by the city of Peoria a couple years ago, the city of Mesa has fallen pretty far behind. I apologize, I only focus on the firefighters, but I would assume that that's probably true of other city employees, has already fallen pretty far behind. As the comparable employees in these other cities continue to go through their steps, that crevasse is going to get larger. All right. Made even more clear to us that our employees value this program significantly when a couple years ago we surveyed them, and they told us, yes, we're willing to give up some of our money at the top of pay ranges to help our younger employees get those. That was also made clear. I share this with Ryan Russell's authorization from the police officers group. They just did a survey last week of 408 police officers, and the ratio was 62% in favor of steps, with only 38% in favor of returning the 2%. You guys have to look at, you know, how you're going to allocate these monies moving forward, and it's all to the positive. I want to make sure that I emphasize that. But this year is going to be really important, because Chris made a statement when we had this debate last, is that he wants to cap this thing this year. He needs to put a stop to this step discussion. And I'd kind of like to get it out there, because we continue, again, to have this battle of calculators. So the ask, if you will, on behalf of the firefighters, is that two things. One is that however you come to agreement on allocating the monies in the future, that heavy emphasis is played on the STEP program, and a meaningful STEP program that doesn't take ultimately 12 years to get to the advertised top step of the pay ranges for our young employees, but closer to the 7 years that we've been promising them for so long. And the other thing that would be really critically important for you as council members, I'll finish, is that you direct management to give specific costing of the MOUs for those of us that negotiate them, because you guys need to know what the car costs, and so do we. Right now, we talk about the price of the tires and the valve stems and everything else. We don't know the price of the car, and it really puts council to disadvantage because you don't know if you're talking about a $1.5 million package or a $900,000 package. And until we get to the day, our calculators are going to keep arm wrestling. So those are my 2 points. Thank you for your time and indulgence.
Thank you, Brian. And you may be a pencil, but you're a very important pencil to us. Just understand that. Okay. And we'll use that next item is Mr. Brady.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. The direction we're seeking from Council at this moment is that, as we've discussed, the city has identified approximately $4 million in savings associated with health benefit savings that's been accrued for a variety of different reasons. Both contributions from employees as well as well-negotiated contracts for the coming years. What the direction we seek from Council today is for staff to begin immediate discussions with the two represented groups that are represented by MOUs in both the police and fire areas to discuss how their allocation of that $4 million would be defined within the MOU and bring that back to Council. And then for the remaining employees that we would, as we've previously committed, restore back the 2% effective the first pay period in January.
Okay. So if I could restate that, what you're recommending is that we, for those employees not covered by memorandums of understanding, which basically are employees other than police and fire, which are covered by two separate MOUs, that we implement the restoration of the 2% pay cut starting in January, and that we give you direction and authority to go back and renegotiate, because we cannot unilaterally and will not. You know, Mr. Jeffries brought up some points. This council does not decide or dictate what that money is paid. That's a negotiated item with the MOU. You'll meet back. You and staff will meet back with the representative, Mr. Jeffries, on the fire side, Mr. Russell and his group on the police side, to determine how those allocated monies will be applied within those two groups covered by MOUs. Is that accurate?
That's correct.
Are you done? Okay. Any questions? Vice Mayor.
Thank you, Mayor. I think that's a fair decision to let the various employee organizations decide how they're going to allocate their share. Certainly, though, I do want to stress that it's important that we have, like any organization, public or private, that we have a fair compensation system, and we need to keep an eye on how we're paying our employees compared to the public sector, other cities, and how we're paying them compared to similar private sector organizations, and having a system like the merit system in place is part of that, and I want to take a look at that and make that a priority for returning that to our employees. Thank you.
Which I believe we do every budget year?
Right.
Well, okay. It's coming up again, so yeah. And certainly the last 4 years we've been on a slide, so we will continue to look
We'll have that discussion coming up in February. I think we've set a date. That'll be a good time to have that conversation.
Yeah, it's good for them to hear, though, that
we're always looking at these things. I appreciate you mentioning it.
You know, the fact of the matter is that government is a service business, for lack of a better term. We're here to serve the people. And the thing is that that's people serving people. Over 70% of our total costs that are incurred in government or personnel related costs, because we're a people business, and our people are important to us. And I think any time we can send a message that we value what they bring to the table, we value their service. And you know, our employees have, and I can't say this enough, have done a great job over the last 3 years in some very difficult times. We're going on 3 years now that we implemented the austerity and the restructurings that led to staff reductions and departmental reorganizations. And, you know, we turned the world upside down. And we did it, frankly, because we had to at the time. And I think it's worked out very well for us as far as figuring out new ways to provide services to our to our citizens. On the other hand, we have a group of people who have borne the brunt of that and have carried that burden, and not only saw changes in responsibilities and responsibilities added upon other responsibilities, but also saw real, not just budgeted, real pay reductions, real freezes in what were programmed compensation programs that froze steps in place, and therefore they've, and I've said this before, they've borne what I believe is a disproportionate. And we've said from day one that we want to restore that balance. We want to recognize that our employees are valuable. And so I think the council I appreciate Vice Mayor bringing up that we can't just assume people understand where we're coming from. And I'd like to reiterate his words and say that as the budget comes up again, and let's hope that some of the trend that we've seen, where we've actually seen some increases in the economy, will help us to be fair with our employees, because we do value what they do. Okay. All right. No more discussion. We have the staff recommendation direction. Okay.
Or we just need direction.
I think we just need direction.
Yes, if that's the direction. Yep.
Direction. Is there anyone that's opposed to the direction that the staff is?
We'll move for that, and then we will also, we'll address all the employees that are affected. Okay.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thanks, Candace. And I'm assuming that you'll reach out as quickly as possible to the police and fire, so we can resolve this issue, hopefully in time, if possible. Before the first of the year, so we can put into place whatever adjustments. The vice mayor said as we were sitting down, gee, I didn't know that giving money back could be more difficult than taking it away. We understand that, as Mr. Jeffrey said, there are complexities involved. We hope people keep sight of the fact that we're trying to do what's right. And sometimes this is one of those no good deed goes unpunished deals. Oh, well. Okay, here presentation, discuss Fiesta District streetscaping and police station.
Yeah, I'm having that same problem this morning.
Well, good morning, Mayor and Council. Over a year ago, you tasked us with a couple of projects for the Fiesta District, to look at the Fiesta District and what we could do in the area to create a sense of place, as well as locate a new police station in the Fiesta District. We've done that. We hired two very excellent consultants who I have here with me this morning. I also have Patrick Murphy. He's been our economic development champion, working with us throughout the project and involving all the stakeholders. To my immediate left is Rick Kreitzer of Kreitzer and Associates, and his work has been involving on creating the sense of place in the Fiesta District in terms of streetscaping and what we can do in the public areas and some long-reaching planning. To my far left is Vince DiBella of DiBella Smish, a local Mesa architect who's designing and working with us on the police station in the Fiesta District. So I'm going to turn it over to Rick first, and then Vince is going to kind of walk you through the designs for the police station, and hopefully, if you desire, then we'll be proceeding into the next phases of the project after we get your input and comments.
Thank you, Beth. Good morning, Mr. Mayor, members of the City Council. My name is Rick Kreitzer, Kreitzer Consulting Group, and we were charged with creating an implementation plan for the district, and that was based on a lot of good work that had been done prior to us coming on board, primarily the Fiesta District Handbook, which you see a slide here. And that handbook was instrumental in kind of developing the framework and the vision for the district, and our goal was to bring that to closer to reality through an implementation plan. So the Fiesta District Handbook was adopted in January of 2009. We were brought on board in October through 2010. You've seen some small improvements out there in terms of signage that are the first step that were outlined in that handbook. Just to give you an overall framework, I'm sure most of you are familiar, but the Fiesta District area is bounded by Tempe Canal on the west, Extension on the east, basically the US 60 on the south, and then probably one property north of Southern on the north. The vision that was laid out in the handbook was something that our team looked at early on and definitely agree with in terms of the direction that the district ought to go, and that is try to create an economically vibrant, pedestrian-friendly, and active destination. And what we're trying to do that with is to make it pedestrian-friendly with an integrated mix of uses. You'll hear me talk about mixed use quite a bit through the presentation. What we want to do is create a diversity of entertainment and evening uses and unique branding, supported by public transit, a place to live, work, and play, and make it vibrant again. So the first thing we look at as a consultant is the street scenes. It's something the city controls. It's public right away. So how do we improve the area through the development of a more viable street scene? Street scenes contain three zones, vehicular, bike, and pedestrian, and what you have out there today is really auto-centric or geared towards the automobile. What we want to do is try to create a better balance of those zones by pulling pedestrians away from the street, creating some separation, enlarging bike zones where we can, creating separation with nice shade trees and landscaping, both in the parkways and in the medians, to create, as I said, a better balance between those zones. This is what, for the most part, you have out in the district today. You can see wide paved areas for vehicles, pretty narrow bike lanes, and pretty narrow sidewalks and pedestrian zones. So what we did is we looked at all streets within the district. I'm not going to go through all of them, but just using Alma School as an example, what we're proposing here is to maintain the traffic lanes, a four-lane condition in each direction, enlarge the bike lanes, which are generally 4 to 5 feet today, to a more a safer zone of 7 feet, create a planter area adjacent to the curb to separate the pedestrians from the street. That's pretty uniform throughout the district from street to street. As I said, we evaluated all of the streets within the district and developing those streetscape components. We also looked at the opportunity to create a pedestrian linkage east to west along the ADOT channel. We're proposing a canal trail that goes from one end of the district to the other. It would be a 10-foot wide soft surface trail for walking, hiking, walking your dog, those kinds of things, but creates an important pedestrian linkage from one end of the district to the other in the east-west. The other concept we had was creating a little wider paseo we're calling the South Paseo, which would extend on the south side of Southern, just west of Longmore over to Alma School. And what that would look like would be a natural extension of the streetscaping along Southern itself, but would create an opportunity to create a wider zone to the right of the picture there, 15 to 20 foot wide turf area, and then another landscape buffer. And this would meander around existing parking and buildings, so it could be built with minimal impacts to those elements. And what this kind of creates is more of a linear park concept along that south side and creates that nice pedestrian environment that's going to be key to transforming this district. This is a rendering of what it would look like in that area. Southern is to the left of the photo, and then you can see the nice wide pathways. The other area where requires some improvement is creating identity out in the district, and that was something that the handbook went into in great detail. We've taken that a little farther and identified some specific elements that we think would provide some identity out there in the district. The first thing we looked at was intersection enhancements in terms of creating some identity at each of the major intersection nodes within the district. And what we're proposing there is kind of two designs, one at the primary intersections, which would be like an Alma School Southern intersection or Dobson, which is on the left of your photo there. That would be a colored asphalt treatment. We're proposing that in lieu of pavers or concrete because it's easier to maintain, it's a little cheaper to install, and they've come a long way in the last 5 years in terms of the type of designs that can be done with some of these street print materials. The photo on the right is a secondary intersection treatment that would complement the primary. It'd be a little different, so there'd be a hierarchy of intersections and create some identity out there. These designs are kind of from the handbook in terms of the Fiesta S and the confetti patterns in the background. Once again, playing off the good work that was done prior to us coming on board. The other area we feel we could create some identity is with entry monumentation. We're proposing South entry monuments on Dobson, Longmore, and Alma School as you're coming into the district from the south. Those would be a vertical monumentation on the east side of the street announcing your entry into the district. Vertical element with the Fiesta logo, a steel lattice structure that waves down through here. Some wayfinding on the bottom of the sign pointing to the mall, pointing to the MCC and DOP and to the hospital and other businesses as well. And then possibly a water feature from the base of that element, just in just conceptual drawings at this point, but something that really catches your eye and says, you know, you're coming into a unique district. We're also proposing entry monumentation on the east and west ends of the major commercial part of the district at Alma School and Dobson. These structures, you can see, would wrap around the corners within existing right-of-way, once again announcing the Fiesta district. This is a daytime view, and basically what we're proposing here, this is a steel lattice structure that contains a crushed glass material, so it's somewhat transparent to be able to see through. These ribbons here would actually be LED lighting that this will convert to a night view. You'll see that it would create a very vibrant signage element as you come into the district. We're really excited about this design in terms of implementing this. I think it would do a great job in really creating that wow factor coming into the district. Once again, a photo of the street scene as you see it today and what we're really trying to transform it to with the streetscaping design on this project. Sure.
Just really quick, between those two pictures, are you losing a lane of traffic? I can't tell, so.
I'll get
to that.
You're
going to get that?
Yeah.
Oh, wait.
Yeah, it's coming up. All
right. We may be losing one thing, but we're gaining so much more.
So, Southern Avenue we see as a key aspect of what we're trying to achieve out here and to transform this district into something a little bit different than it is today. Southern Avenue used to support a big box, used to be a big box corridor that we believe, our consulting team believe that ship has kind of sailed, that, and there's plenty of evidence out there that that is a tough market to deal with along Southern. And we see it as a key artery in the success of the district. And one of the things we know from doing mixed-use projects is streets can be places too, and all great mixed-use districts have great streets. And that's something I think we need to keep in mind as we move forward. So once again, this is Southern from Tempe Canal to Alma School, different views. What we're proposing to do on Southern is to reduce three through lanes in each direction to two lanes in each direction, maintaining all the turning lanes at the various intersections. If there's a right turn lane today, that would remain. Left turns would remain, because that's typically where your traffic breaks down, is at the intersections. We have a very extensive traffic analysis to support this. Essentially, the key result of that study was that we've seen a 30% decrease in traffic on Southern since its heyday in the 80s. I won't get into all those details, but I can certainly answer questions regarding the traffic after we're done. So we're looking at a four-lane section. What that allows us to do within existing right-of-way is to expand those pedestrian, making a joint-use trail on both sides of the street for bikes and pads, taking them off the street, creating a really nice landscape buffer adjacent to the curb, plant the medians where they currently aren't planting to create that balance and the shade that's needed out there. The other thing is, if you're familiar, the large utility poles on the north side of the street will never be able to, well, I don't want to say never, but it's tough to remove those. It's very costly. So we're looking at trying to integrate them better into the street scene by doing an aesthetic wrap on those poles. We've talked to SRP initially to get their feedback, and we think it's going to be a viable alternative. That'd be like a mesh product. It'd maybe go up 15 feet, and it wouldn't hide the poles, but it would try to integrate them better into the street scene.
Rick,
yes.
if we could stop real quickly, because I don't want to pass over on this lane reduction. I know you don't have in here the detail that we had before, but if you could just summarize the findings of those traffic studies that you referred to.
Sure.
And why you don't believe, or we don't believe, and the professionals don't believe that it will have a significant negative impact on traffic flow in the area.
Sure, happy to. And I do have our traffic engineer if we get drill it down. But basically the results of that study, we took a look at the volumes, and traffic is defined by levels of service, both at a mid-block and an intersection location. So we look at level of services today, and then we looked at it in the future, both with maintaining a six-lane and with going to a four-lane between Dobson and Alma School. And what we found were nominal increases in level of service. So I think we saw one location intersection that went from a level of service C to a level of service D. And I do have those slides at the end of this presentation if we want to get into those.
I don't know that we need to get that detailed, but the basic reason for that is?
We've seen a significant decrease in traffic on Southern, almost a 30% decrease since its peak in the late 80s.
So the road was built six lanes to handle that peak in the Correct. Late 80s. We're not at that peak anymore. So basically we almost, I don't want to call it overcapacity.
Yeah. Right.
But if we were building that road today to meet today's and the projected traffic flow, we wouldn't build it to 1988 standards because we just don't see that amount of traffic.
That's correct.
Councilman Higgins?
Even with increase in Mesa Community College students and expansion of Banner, Desert Hospital, all those don't have an effect?
Well, in Banner's case, we see most of the traffic coming in off of Dobson. Okay. And same with the mall. We counted those as well. And, you know, the mall was very concerned as a stakeholder we've been dealing with for 4 or 5 months. And we showed that 72% of their traffic was coming off Alma School. So all of a sudden, they weren't as concerned. And the same goes for the hospital.
Well, and I think also what you have is you have a 30% decrease. And without those situations you're talking about, it would probably be a 40% decrease.
Yeah.
So it's not that it's stayed the same. It's just that it's kept it from going down. You just don't have as much activity in the area as you used to.
Right.
And how does the bus, you know, you're going to have bus turnouts, I'm assuming, in those areas? Or
Yes.
So, because that's a heavy trafficked.
Yes.
Right.
So the buses that now stop in the third lane will have a turnout, so they'll effectively be out of the two traffic lanes.
Okay, great. Thank you.
And one of the other things to think about is the 30% reduction doesn't account for the fact that there's a certain amount of traffic right now that is pass-through traffic because of the, you know, the 60s backed up or whatever. By right-sizing the street, that pass-through traffic will probably find its course that it should be on, which is the 60. So there's some of that. As well.
Councilmember Richens?
Yeah, you kind of got to think of it. I visiting downtown Phoenix for the conference, the National League of Cities conference, I was amazed at how narrow some of the streets were that have, you know, Bank One Ballpark and AmeriCoast Arena and high rises with huge densities with not wide streets serving them.
Right.
You know, people are still able to circulate around. You know, if you could never widen a street wide enough to handle the perceived traffic of a 30 or 40 story building, but it somehow it works.
And I
think rather than, you know, to me, the way I got over this hump is rather than saying we're reducing, we're really right-sizing the street is what we're doing. Okay. We're taking the street from a design that satisfied a much larger demand. We didn't have the 60 and the to the extent that I think we had a lot more flow through. And the fact of the matter is that, you know, when that road was designed, Southern Alma School was the center of not only Mesa, but of the entire East Valley. Well, you know, that traffic has been spread out now.
Yep.
We're not, even with Mesa community and all that's going on, it's just not what it used to be. So we're really right-sizing the street rather than reducing capacity below what's needed.
Right. We call it a roadway diet. And one of the other things that's important to note is that west of Dobson, Southern is five lanes today. East of Country Club, it's four lanes.
Yeah.
So this is a segment that, you know, is six lanes, but is essentially bookended on both sides by restrictions. So.
Thank you for that summary.
Okay. Getting back to the section, then you add the South Paseo on the south side of Southern. With redevelopment on the north, you can see you've developed a place. You've developed an area that's almost like a linear park. And that's what we're trying to get to with Southern, to create that opportunity. And being able to right-size that street gives us that opportunity. So what will that diet do? It'll definitely enhance the pedestrian experience out there, which is the key to transforming a district to more of a mixed-use neighborhood retail environment. but it'll also take that barrier, which is southern, and make it a connector, or what I you know, take it farther, a liability to an asset. One of the things that you want to encourage that north-south movement as well, and having six lanes of traffic to traverse on a three-quarter of a mile interval is not conducive to what this corridor needs to become. And lastly, beginning that transformation. There's no delusions here that the city can do all of this. What we're trying to do is stoke the fire for private investment. And that's really how successful mixed-use developments get started. You know, the economy notwithstanding, when it does come back, you want to have the structure in place that private development will flock here, because the metrics out here are pretty compelling in terms of attracting that development. I'll talk a little bit about that in a bit.
So this is just a perspective looking from west from Longmore with the streetscape elements in place. These are a few images. This is at Alma School looking west. You'll see it transform what it is today to what it will become. One of the things we're also proposing as part of this corridor improvement is these large power poles. You can see the aesthetic wrap that I talked about. They currently have these large 69 kV wires at the top, and the 12 kV wires are down below. Those are proposed to be undergrounded as part of this project as well. So those lower wires are really key to kind of helping the aesthetics, getting those underground. This is a parkway, a composite of before, looking east towards Alma School. You can see the B of A tower in the background there, and that would be transformed into something like this. So kind of putting all the pieces together, streetscape elements district-wide, this is the long-term build-out. Canal Trail, South Paseo, the police station site, which Vince will talk about in a second here. The entry gateway monumentations, both on the south edge and the northeast and west. Intersection enhancements. One of the things that will happen once this area starts to transform itself, that we'll be looking at east-west and north-south Paseo connections on private property to connect up to this infrastructure. And that's something that will be key to getting pedestrian connection between the school and the mall and the hospital. You've got a great asset up at Main Street, light rail system. We propose and look at some sort of transit connector, shuttle service, rubber tire shuttle service that could service that area. Mixed use is very conducive to transit. They're definitely compatible, and that's something that we want to capitalize on long term. I mentioned the metrics. I mean, we've done a lot of mixed use work in the nation, and one of the things you don't see that you have out here is you have an employer with 5,000 employees at the hospital on a daily basis. You have one of the largest junior colleges in the western United States and a regional mall all within your district. Those are pretty powerful metrics. There's a lot of people here on a daily basis that need services, that this area begins to transform itself, and mixed use, as you see here, comes on board. There's a great potential for a housing component for people that want to live close to their school or their place of employment, and create that 24/7 vibrant community that the vision sets out. So one of the major thing, or the final thing we were tasked with doing was, okay, that's great, we've got all these great improvements. What should we build now with the capital budget of about $10 to $11 million? So we looked at that. This is the infrastructure that we're looking at long term. The priority project we've proposed consists of these elements: the south entry monuments at Dobson, Longmore, and Alma School, the east and west entry monuments at Dobson and Alma School on Southern, intersection enhancements primary at Longmore, Dobson, and Alma School, and secondary intersections at four locations. What we're trying to do here is trying to create that shorter block pattern that's required to kind of set the template for a narrower southern, a mixed-use district, a neighborhood retail corridor. Streetscape improvements from Dobson to Alma School.
including the narrowing of Southern from 6 to 4 lanes. That would include all the fixtures and furnishings that you typically see on a streetscape type project. These are not set in stone. These are just ideas. The middle two actually are from the handbook. This is a recently completed project in Chandler, which I think is something we ought to look at. It's got street light poles, ped lights and street lights on the same pole with banner, and it's got that kind of Fiesta S to it. But those are the kinds of things that need to be investigated further and put to use. But just suffice it to say that these will be elements that will be included in the priority project if you choose to go ahead. Once again, just transforming the area, pretty dramatic transformation. In terms of costs, the streetscape components, including the narrowing, would be about $8.7 million. The Paseo itself would be about $1 million, and that I believe the city has a federal grant for that Paseo work that they're proposing to utilize for this. Primary intersections would be about $600,000, about $200,000 per intersection. Secondaries, another $600,000 at $150,000 apiece. East and west monuments and south entry monuments brings a total to about $11.5 million. This is a menu. Obviously, there's things that can be added, subtracted, but just our initial thoughts on what that best bang for the buck project ought to be to kind of get the transformation of this area moving forward. So the next steps, if you choose to go ahead, would be the design development phase, which would be selecting furnishings and developing precise alignments for the street, working through those preliminary engineering elements. That'd be about 3 months. Construction plans would take about 9 months, and a construction of the priority project would be about 12 months, give or take a month or two. So in essence, from the get-go, you're looking at about 2 years to having this project in place. With that, I'm going to turn it over to Vince. He's going to talk a little bit about the police station.
Do you want to?
Or we can take questions.
Any questions for Rick before we move on?
So I don't know if you want to do it now or later. We're just going to look for that. We need to get some direction if we're okay with moving forward with this recommended
project
with the elements you saw here, or is that something we want to discuss?
Councilor Fender.
You know, I'm supportive of the project. I look at District 2, and it's been the recipient of millions of dollars of improvements in streets and canal paths and other things. I've had opportunities to ride with the gang squad in the police department with our economic development folks, specifically in this area, looking at some of the challenges. I think it needs to have investment. You know, I'm no expert, but, you know, I'm a little concerned about a center east-west Paseo. For me, I would think we're trying to get those thousands of folks at MCC and others to kind of go to the mall and other things. But I take the professional opinions and trust those that I've seen today. So supportive. It needs the investment. I'm glad we're looking at this. So.
Councilor Cavanaugh.
Thank you. I also wanted to chime in. We've had a pretty extensive public outreach on this, and the mayor and I attended a meeting last month on presenting this to the community at the size of which we really haven't seen before. And we stopped counting at 100 when people were there. But the very interesting thing about that and discussing it with all the staff and consultants who were there is we didn't get a single negative comment. And that's pretty rare at a
even
at
from
a
those
meeting.
That we expected.
Even from those we expected to get negative comments. And the responses from residents, from businesses, from the major stakeholders have all been positive. From that presentation to, again, I made a presentation about this to the Mesa Grande Community Alliance the other night, and again, got very positive comments on it. And I think our consultants of staff and staff have really focused on the best way to jumpstart this project, the best way to lay the bones of public investment that will create an incentive or interest in the private sector for so much of the other connections that Councilmember Finter talks about that are important. So the presentation that we have, I think, will be noticeable, will be dramatic, and when you combine it with the police station that we're going to talk about in a few minutes, when we combine it with, there are actually three projects that Mesa Community College will be working on concurrent with this that are major. with an $11 million performing arts center, a new art gallery, a revamping or remodeling of the theater out back at Mesa Community College. You have a really significant public investment occurring within the framework of a relatively defined area. And so I'm hoping that we'll be able to move forward with these. Thank you.
Great. Councilman Richens.
I'm guessing that this work, what we're doing here, is not all that innovative or earth-shattering. Could you tell us a little bit about some other areas that have done a similar projects and what some of the results might be?
I think that the greatest example pertinent to this project is the Arizona Avenue project that just completed in Chandler. One of our team members, J2, was involved in that project, and it was a similar project in the sense that it was a six-lane road that went down to four lanes. It's a much smaller reach of street, but one of the things that's interesting about that project in this economy, the results of that, they've seen a 17% increase in sales tax volume down there. There's 14 new businesses that have moved in. The naysayers about the traffic are, you know, for the most part now lauding the fact that it was done because they're seeing their business increase. Now, that doesn't say that that's exactly what will happen out here. We think it will. But that's the greatest example. My other experiences.
If I could real quickly, because that's an interesting example, because Arizona Avenue was a barrier between where Chandler City Hall used to be and the buildings on the east side of Arizona Avenue and their little town square. It was you had no intention of going across that. It's amazing what that streetscape did, and when people scoff at the fact that you can turn an automobile-centric road into a pedestrian-friendly, that's a great example.
Yeah, it is.
Because now when you're down there, it just almost invites you in.
Mm-hmm.
And the surroundings are much more pedestrian-friendly, and you don't even realize that all of a sudden you're crossing the street. And it's just, it has that impact on you. It really does make a big difference, and that's a great example.
And they don't have near the metrics you do here in terms of
right.
people that are there on a daily basis. Captive or not, I mean, they're working there, they're going to school there, they're whatever. I think that the metrics you have out here are pretty compelling. Other examples are California. I've done a lot of work in the resort area of Anaheim, which has a different attraction, obviously, in Disneyland, and we're doing a similar district around Anaheim Stadium right now, where we're not necessarily narrowing streets, but we're certainly employing streetscape elements that are, we're seeing actual residential development come in to capitalize on those entertainment uses there. So,
and that's important to recognize, because I think people sometimes, and shame on us for not communicating better, we see the future of that area along Southern as not that we're going to have more big box move in to take the empty big box spaces. Mm-hmm. That's not going to happen.
Right.
If big box retailing were viable in that area, you'd see it there right now.
Yes.
But what we do see is the potential for mixed use and a much more urban environment. I think that's absolutely viable because of the location next to a freeway, because of the dynamics of the neighborhood, the college, the hospital,
right.
all the things, the mall. And I think what you'll see is if you create that pedestrian friendly environment, that streetscape, developers will be much more amenable to going in and reusing those large parking lots and those large big boxes and repurposing them, which we have stated we're very, very willing to do from a zoning standpoint, to turn those into mixed use and bring some urban type living into that area.
Yeah.
That's not going to happen in the current environment. It may happen, and it certainly is much more realistic to see it happening if you have an environment that's much more that is much more compatible with that kind of urban residential setup. Councilman Richens.
Does anybody know approximately what the dollar amount of sales tax revenue that we've generated out of the Fiesta District? When did the Fiesta Mall open? 1976. You know, what's the approximate amount of sales tax revenue? I don't know. When was the last time we've reinvested in this area? It's like changing the.
I don't have them with me.
I don't know. Anybody ballpark that at all?
Oh boy,
billions and billions.
We have. I mean, yeah. Since that time is what you're asking.
Yes.
Oh wow.
You know, it's just been a long time, I think, since we put any public investment back into this. I think sometimes there's an expectation on the part of the public that you build the streets and they're good, and you just kind of maintain them from there on out. And that's not necessarily the case. You know, this is an economic engine for Mesa, and it's time to change the oil. And this is part of that. So it's part of that upgrade. And I think we've realized a significant amount of revenue after that. I mean, I would guess it would probably be $100 million or more since 1976 would be my guess.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, so putting another $10 or $11 million back into this area to freshen it up, I think, is a really good bet. Thanks.
Councilmember Higgins.
And to dovetail on that, not only that, but there's been some other challenges in that area with private landowners unable to come to the party. So it's not just a normal area of Mesa. It's an area with uncooperative people that are dragging it down even further. So this is probably the shot in the arm. I hate that kind of, but that it needs to get those people moving or get them out.
Okay.
So I just want to summarize. We'd like to move on into design at this point, and then
I think
back
you're hearing a majority of people say, go for it.
Thank you.
Okay.
Vince, it's all yours.
Thank you. Good morning. It's the district police station. It's been a great project to work on so far. We appreciate the opportunity to be involved in it. A couple of key facts of the project. It's being funded by 2008 bond election funds. It's approximately 34,000 square foot building in a two-story configuration. The construction budget, approximately $9.4 million, 4.9 acres property. We're currently in completed programming, and in the process of completing schematic design, actually in the middle of December. And we've incorporated to the best we can the most recent design standards as Rick presented to you in the previous presentation. The property is located in Grove and Westwood. I apologize for my voice. I may be losing it here pretty quick. northwest corner of Grove and Westwood, Grove being the east-west street. Bank of America building and tower, so located just south and east of that. Many of you may have recognized this project as the Aquaterra project in previous lives. The site plan you see in front of you, two points of entry to the facility. I want to speak briefly about the orientation of the building. I can get to the pointer here. The orientation of the building and how it's organized just on the site plan, because it will make some a little more sense to you as we get into more details of the building. There was desire and a need to move the building as close to the intersection or close to the street frontage as possible. That kind of flies in contrast to the needs of having a secure facility for the police. So we tried to balance the idea that moving it close to the street and balance the idea that it still needs to be a secure structure. The round element that you see right at the corner is the community room. The main entry in that square dark area that you see is the main entry of the facility. The project is zoned with the least critical items, if you will, in terms of operations nearest to the street, and the more critical items zoned away from the street to address the idea of having a secure structure, something that is non-impenetrable in terms of protecting what's inside, and still addressing the idea that it needs to be on a street and addressing the street frontage. Again, two points of entry to the yard operations to the back of the facility. One other key feature to this is that most of the parking spaces are covered. That's not a perk. The whole idea behind it is that we're protecting the vehicles and police officers as they leave the facilities and enter the facility, and conversely the same as entering. As well as a minimum, those structures will be planned for solar panels in the future. So we'll provide the infrastructure for that to occur and the opportunity for solar panels to be developed at a later date.
Why later?
Primarily cost. We do have it budgeted in the project, but right now it's throwing us over the $9.4 million that have been allocated for the budget. It's still not out of the running. We're still analyzing it. But right now, at a minimum, we're going to plan the infrastructure for it.
Why don't you continue analyzing it and see if we can narrow it down. I think we have some real opportunities to be an example and to show leadership in these areas, and I don't want to spend money just to spend it. I'm very, very cognizant of the fact that we want to get the most. But I think some of the projects we have coming up, including this, you know, Wrigleyville.
Leave it all the way in through till we get the bids and bring the bids back.
Yeah,
and council
let's do it. But keep that in your mind, because I think I think that would make a big statement.
So we'll go through the design phase, pay for the design fees, put that in, and then we'll value it at the bidding process.
Alrighty.
Okay. Great. Excellent. A pictorial view of just a conceptual view of the site without any of the entourage stuff. Give you an idea of how it's organized to the corner of the intersection, as well as the public interface of where the public parking is and the entry to the building. Another view looking northwest kind of gives you a pretty good idea of what the facility is like. Balancing the idea that we don't want it to look like a bunker. It needed to fit in with the context of the area, but also make a statement as to what could be the future of the area in terms of materials and how a building might be organized on the site.
And Mayor Council, let me just compliment Vince on this, because
some of our first perspectives of this was more like a typical municipal, what most people would think is a municipal building. And we really suggested and challenged Vince to kind of look at the context of the area and go ahead, and it was okay to have curvilinear lines in a municipal facility. And he came back with something we really fell in love with. So it's very functional, I think it's got some dynamic to it. And then not only in the lines that he's used, but also just in the different types of materials, what I think he's going to show, which we're trying to be consistent with the handbook, or the Fiesta handbook, and trying to make, you know, fit within that context of the handbook. So trying to set that standard going forward.
Vice Mayor?
How well did you stay within the budget in doing that? Because on one hand, people don't like just the typical tilt slab utilitarian building because it doesn't reflect well in the neighborhoods. On the other hand, others complain that some of our buildings look a little bit like the Taj Mahal, and it's overkill.
Yeah,
so
I don't know how many Taj Mahal buildings we have in our inventory, but we have.
I can point to one, but I won't.
Yeah, and that has columns. But this, I think, as you look
and
at
actually
this,
on a cost per square foot, that costs less than a lot of other tilt-up buildings.
Yeah.
Do. So
and Vince
you know,
can talk about this. I think one of the things we've done is brought the
perception
Maybe we could go ahead and talk a little bit about this while we're here. We have our contractor on board already, and. As part of a CM at risk, a construction manager at risk process. And we've had them at the table during these initial concepts designs. One of the things we've worked quite a bit with them on is materials, because that's where your cost of your building goes up, is in the materials. You know, if you want Italian porcelain panels, that's going to cost something. We've strayed away from trying to do the more exotic materials and still get a unique building shape, but conserve on the cost of our materials and get durable materials that work really well in our environment. And Vince and the contractor have done a considerable amount of work to do that and make sure we're in budget and still get a unique-looking design.
Well, and, Council, we have to. We don't look at these buildings probably. We look at them a little differently than most development, because we look at this as we're not only developing, but we're going to be the tenant of this facility for the next 30 to 50 years. And so while we look at it, we have to be very practical and constrained by resources, but we also have to build in the quality of sustainability that it's going to last a while. But it has to fit in the context of looking and feeling like it fits with the other buildings. There's a nice, well-architect designed building to our north of this facility, and so we didn't want to come in there and interrupt that and present something very different that didn't fit in the context. So I think we've tried to balance that out with the idea of having the contractor in line to say, here's the statements we want to make on the contrast of colors and the different types of materials. And I think Vince has brought to the table some things that have worked well, and then the contractor suggested some other things along the way. So.
Chris, along that line, too, in as far as future use of this building and how it's going to adapt to our needs over the next 30, 40, 50 years or more, I'm noticing a whole lot of open rooftop space. Have we considered how... changing in the use of energy sources like solar might be able to fit onto this and how that would integrate into the electrical systems? And
yes.
That was the question.
In terms of that, the rooftop is a potential for that. We do have mechanical units and other things we'll have to deal with, but in terms of our design and our how we organize the roof, there'll be opportunities, and you'll see that in the analysis that we probably will have a section of the roof that can be accommodated for future solar panels or panels in the project itself.
Because and I don't know if this picture is completely accurate or not, but I see hardly any cutouts or mechanicals on that roof, particularly on the taller one. Very little that would provide any shading, so that might be a great opportunity to explore.
And
how does that work into, you know, making sure that the mechanicals and the layout of the roof and the layout of the cutouts are all keeping that in mind? It's something we could do early on without much cost.
And you make a good point in terms of how the building is oriented and on the site, that we are looking at that north-south orientation. So you notice that the building is south-facing. And the idea there, as well as the organization of the parking structures, they'll be tilted south-facing to maximize the opportunity for exposure for the solar panels. And you're right, once a panel is shaded, the whole thing goes dark. So we have a lot of things going for us here that we can work with.
We're talking about the opportunity to take a leadership role in setting a standard for design here. I think there's another leadership role in that renewable energy, and this may be a good opportunity to look at that. In the future, we just want to make sure that the design accommodates that if we decide to go that direction later. Thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah, and one more thing as we look at design, too. I think there's coming from a development industry and standpoint in home building where I had to create things that looked great but were cost effective. You don't have to give up good design to be efficient and effective. And I appreciate the fact that you've worked to accomplish both. Most people believe that if you're boring, you're inexpensive. That absolutely is not the case. I've seen some of the most expensive construction in the world that were absolutely boring. I've also seen some beautiful structures that made a statement that were very, very cost effective. And I don't ever want to get in the mode that we're so worried about how people think that we don't remember that these are also, this is the people's Billy, God, that sounds so Soviet, doesn't it? Talk about boring buildings. But you know, this is a community building. This is the citizens of Mesa, and you know, that architecture is something that I think they'll be proud of. But I think that you've done it in a way that recognizes that you can accomplish those things, like Beth said, through use of materials. Through you can get a lot of bang for the buck when you're using architectural. Items such as changing colors, the rounded corners, things like that, that really aren't that much more expensive, but they certainly add a lot to the visual, of the building. So I commend you for doing that, and hope that we always try to make something that it's a statement that this is our building, this is the community's building, and that will last 30, 40, 50 years from now.
Okay, so thank you. There'll be a slide later that shows a little bit more detail on materials, but these are regional materials, and they're all integral colored devices, so that long-term maintenance, long-term quality remains over the life of the building, and it is a key design component. And thank you for the comments. Again, just another view from the Westwood side. The community room, the metal panels, again, the integral colored masonry, all elements that we can draw from for the future, and we think the building will be timeless, and that was kind of a key thing in the whole concept.
On materials, it looks like you've used at least three materials on the face, three or four?
Yeah, there's a combination of integral colored masonry, the ribbed panel material that you see, the glass. And we're also using some cut stone at the entry element in the slide that you see here. The shaded windows. There's lots of things to draw from to kind of help reinforce the architecture.
That's great.
Some key elements of the project. It's staffed to accommodate 125 to the year 2030. I There is a fueling station on site, the community room you saw, the locker room, the fitness areas, all the support services that are needed for the building. This will be a LEED certified building in connection with previous discussions on the energy consumption and have a complete streetscape in concert with the Fiesta District standards along Grove and Westwood, including improving the intersection to some of the images you saw in the previous presentation to kind of jumpstart the idea that this is a new standard for the area.
Yes, Councilmember Higgins has a question.
Thank you, Mayor. Are we putting natural gas in there? And are we thinking of having the ability to have a natural gas fueling station as the technology changes? And so in 10 years when we want the technology works and it's better and we love it and we're converting our fleet, we don't have to rip up everything and go all over again.
There is natural gas to the site.
Okay.
The fueling is conventional at this point. Mm-hmm. I don't think we've come across the idea that...
Right. Yeah, you know, looking at, thinking ahead and...
Well, we thought ahead years ago, and we actually had several police cars that were CNG, and then they stopped building.
Right, different technology.
And so, and actually, I think the fueling stations, as we've used them in the past, have been more centralized for that purpose because it's a very specialized equipment in the maintenance. So if that were to come back, most likely we would combine that in more of a central location, possibly.
So we have the ability, if we want to do it here, we have the capability of doing that. We have space. We have gas to the site.
Yeah. But right now, it's not. I'm assuming it's more.
But we're using gas water heaters and all that type of stuff too, right?
Correct.
Okay, so there'll be natural gas on site somewhere. Yeah.
And primarily for the backup generator system that's required for the building, it will be fueled by natural gas. Looking ahead, again, we had a public meeting, as you all know, a few weeks back. We'll be submitting for design review and planning and zoning next week with subsequent public hearings in February. We're also anticipating completing schematic design by the middle of December and hope to get right into construction documents pending your decisions here today, 1st of January, and have... a building permit available in May of next year. Let's start a construction in June.
Great.
So we're moving forward. So unless there's any other comments, we're going to move forward. So,
any objection to moving forward on as accelerated schedule as we possibly can? We didn't spend a whole lot of time talking about the timing of the streetscape improvements in the Fiesta District.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that it seems to me like you've tightened up the schedule a little bit from what was presented in the Dobson Ranch, and I appreciate that. I think why wait? The sooner the better.
Let's get on it.
As fast as we can get that going. We've got the concept. We've got the basic agreement. The money's there. So on these two projects, I think the sooner the better. Unless there's some disagreement with that. No.
Great.
Thank you.
Okay.
Richens had to think about that a second.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Acknowledge receipt of minutes of various boards and committees. Vice Mayor, move. Councilmember Higgins, second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. Hear reports on meetings and conferences attended. Nothing. It's pretty quiet. We had a dinner at my house. We served turkey. I don't know if any of you else had anything going on like that. It's really interesting.
We had steak.
Yeah, you had steak at the fire station. Okay. Mr. Brady.
Thank you, Mayor. Just remind council this Saturday from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. that they're having a Mesa Holiday Festival here in downtown between McDonald Street, between Main and Pepper Place. So invite everyone down for that. There'll be a tree lighting at 5 p.m. We also have this Saturday from 8 to noon, an ACE Express recycling event, so you can bring your recycled items down to the 2412 North Center location. So this is the North Center location. So encourage residents as they're going out, I'm sure going out and buying new appliances this year and new computers, this is a place for them to take the old ones to recycle them. So, and then... our next council will be this Monday, December 5th, and we'll see you then.
Okay. Ms. Crocker, no other request to speak?
No, ma'am.
Great. I have a motion adjourned from Councilmember Kavanaugh, a second from Councilmember Fenter. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thank you.